it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we might be getting some lies. Welcome back.
I like this song.
It is a good show. It's a good song. Should they play this underneath Dombrowski and Topper when they speak today?
I think that'd be a little bit disrespectful. Yeah. I would say not.
Disrespectful. It might be accurate. I mean,
well, I mean,
we're getting truth today from the president?
Okay. This is how we should handle this.
As a
collective, mm-hmm. as a grown up, as people,
you had food in your beard.
That right there is probably gonna. I know they're probably killing me on YouTube for that. I mean, every now and then it happens, you know, especially when the beard is getting long and luscious the way it is. I put the oils and the juice and the berries and it's growing. But
luscious, the right word?
Yeah, lush for me.
Okay.
But here's the thing, Joe. Mm-hmm. Before we assume they're going to say something, let's listen to what they have to say first.
But wait, we assume the players who don't get big hits are not going to get big hits in the future. Why should I assume the general manager who's lied to me for years?
This is totally different, Joe. It's the end of the season. Mm. And we have to remember this. This is where, as a fan, we have to engage this as somewhat adults.
Nope.
We have to give him the benefit of the doubt. He saw the same thing that we did.
He saw it last year.
I refuse to give him the. I just want to hear what he has to say.
All right. I think that's fair.
You always want to operate from a position of power.
Sure.
So you never want to show your hand.
Yeah, here we go. The Dave Dombrowski press conference right now.
Operations Dave Dombrowski, who's going to be followed by Phillies manager Rob Thompson. So if anyone has a question, there are microphones on the sides. I got you, Dan, in a second. On my left, Dylan, and then on my right is Santino. So if you got a question, please raise your hand, and I'll get to you. There's going to be a lot of questions, so just bear with me. So let's start over here on the left with Dan.
Dave, what went into the decision to bring back Rob? Was there any serious conversation about perhaps not bringing him back, and is there any extension in play for him?
Well, there was really not much other than the perfunctory after the season, because you're so much in the middle of everything taking place that you're not really focused on that nor anything else, which we've had to do a lot of things of that sort after the season. But really, he was already signed for this coming year, so it really was just a matter of moving forward and having conversations in regards to a lot of different topics with him. I do think at some point we talked that I would look at adding a year into his contract at some point this winter time. It just was not. There's been so many other things we've had to tackle in the meantime that hasn't been the highest priority for him nor us. But we will hopefully do that sometime in the winter time.
Over right on the right here with Bob in the second row.
Dave, close series against the Dodgers, obviously. They're doing what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. Does that dictate it all to you? It shows how close you were. Dictate maybe how much or how little you might want to do this offseason?
Well, the Dodgers have a really good club. I mean, first of all, they're the defending world champs. We went head-to-head to them, really. I mean, those games, that series was very close. I think it just shows you, and it's really an emphasis for us, that we can get a little bit better in so many different ways. That's what you attempt to do, right? I mean, you're always looking to get better. But when you look back at that, I mean, they're really – that pitching staff that they're throwing right now, when their starters throwing as well as they are at this point, they're going to be tough for anybody to score against and to beat. It's really an exceptional, exceptional staff. Snell's two-time Cy Young Award winner. I don't think I've ever seen him throw better. So if you're going to beat him, you're going to really have to do everything right. And we really were toe-to-toe with the pitching aspect of it. Actually, they hit less in the division series than what we did. But it just shows if it's a throw to one side of the home plate versus the other, if it's a bad pitch by a couple inches that gives up a three-run homer at one time versus not hitting the three-run homer yourself. If it is, unfortunately, a missed play at the pitcher's mound. If it's a missed call on a pitch that the umpire apologizes for immediately to your catcher. all those things are little things, and you just have to keep going. We're close to them. We battled them, and I think we're in the same neighborhood, but we didn't beat them, and we have work to do in order to do that.
Okay, Todd on the left.
Are there any other changes to the coaching staff, or is everybody coming back?
Well, there's everybody's coming back, but we're going to have one change. We're adding a role this year that we to try to, again, make us maybe just a little bit better and add something. So we're going to add the position of Major League Field Coordinator, which a lot of clubs have now to their coaching staff. I think about 80% of the clubs have that. Mike Calitri is going to take that role for us. He's an ideal person. He's got the skill set to do that, continue to coordinate spring training and a lot of other things for Rob Thompson. And in turn, we'll look outside the organization to add a Major League bench coach to assist us and assist Topper in different fashion of different things. But everybody else is coming back.
Is it important for the next bench coach or important in your mind to have somebody with maybe more in-game, game-day experience to kind of be in Rob's ear during games?
Well, managers use bench coaches in different fashions during a game. But I think it would be ideal to have somebody that maybe has had some managerial experience or that type of role. But we'll see when we get down to it. There's 8 big league managers' jobs available still. There's already 3 been hired. I don't know how all the things are going to shake out in that regard. But we have that role. We think Cal is perfect for that role. He's done such a good job for us in so many ways. But I think, again, makes us maybe a little bit stronger to have that type of individual on his staff.
And anytime a team doesn't hit in the postseason, Bullseye goes on the hitting coach's back. So what can you say about Kevin Long's, the job that he did? And
Kevin Long's an exceptionally good hitting coach. And with Dustin Lin and Rafael Pena, I think we have a good hitting program. You can always get better, right? Nobody's perfect by any means, but I think that they're very good. We're among the league leaders in so many different categories. We had the league leader in home runs, RBIs, and batting average, and we were pretty high up there in runs scored. I think we improved our plate discipline this year to some extent, didn't chase quite as much. I'll come down to that. That I know a lot of people point to the postseason, and believe me, it's frustrating. You get there and you go year in and year out, and you get beat. That was a really good pitching staff we faced in the postseason. I don't know what you do to hit 100 miles an hour on a consistent basis. We had thought perhaps that some of our hopes would be, I mean, you're always hoping a guy throws a bad game against you. We also thought that maybe a couple of their pitchers, like Sasaki at the end, who really had struggled some at the minor league level, but all of a sudden he's throwing 100 with a split that's outstanding. I can't put that on hitting coaches. You just hope that at some point one of your hitters or a couple of your hitters get hot against that type of pitcher. But that's hard. It's a really, really hard. And that was really, really good pitching. And I can't put that on Kevin and his staff. So they're really good.
Let's go in the back left. It's Matt.
Dave, a year ago you sat here and said you had to be open-minded to change, but that there wasn't necessarily going to be a lot of change, status quo. How do you enter this offseason leaving in a similar round, roster is similar to last year? When you go into this offseason, do you think there needs to be more change?
Well, need to be more change. We won 96 games. And again, you're always looking to get better. So we will be open-minded to that. I think it's a little bit different in that there's some built-in situations for us that are going have to be addressed. So where you go as a club is very much dictated on some of those moves that end up happening, because we've got some key players that are free agents for us. We've got the 3 that were with us all year long with Schwarbs and JT and Ranger, and then you're in a position where Harrison Bader did a really nice job for us too. And we have others that are free agents, but those are really the 4 key guys for us. So bringing them back, not bringing them back, we'd love to have them all if it worked out. It's probably impractical when you're going to have all 4 of them back. We also have some young players that we're going to mesh into our club, leave open. I'm not going to declare that anybody has a job, but there will be some people that we're really open-minded to be in with our big league club next year coming out of spring training. Justin Crawford's one of them. Andrew Painter's another one. Otto Kemp's another one. I wouldn't even preclude Aiden Miller from being that type guy. We really like Gabriel Rincones, who's got a lot of pop in his bat and really hits right-handed pitching even better. So when you start seeing where you end up being those free agents and then given some of the youngsters, I think you have to balance that equation, and then you end up evaluating other moves that you make. We have a very substantial big league payroll, and I don't see that that's going to change. John is very supportive of that, and we have a good club with a lot of good players. But you don't have unlimited. I mean, I read some places, well, how they get better is, well, they sign this guy, they sign that guy. I don't think we're going to have a $400 million payroll. I just don't think that that's a practicality. But we will be open-minded to getting better and making moves, sure.
You see the outfield as a place where you can enact change?
Well, you can, and I would think it would be. That's because the infield is pretty well solidified. But, again, is it catcher? I don't know, because I hope we bring JT back, but I don't know. Where does the DH aspect of that fit into, and the outfield, who plays into that? Justin Crawford, you're looking to put into there, so into a position there and keep it open. So, I mean, outfield's a practical because it's the one area that's probably not as strong as some of the other areas with the club, but it was much improved the second half. I don't know where Bader fits into that. If he re-signs, that changes the picture too. So, but it's, you know, that's a logical area that you would look at.
Okay, John on the left on the wall.
Dave, I'm sure you study baseball history. What have you studied as far as keeping a core together, and how long you keep a core together as far as veterans, maybe getting up there in age a little bit, versus feeling the need to change up the mix a little bit?
Well, I just talked about the possibility to change in the mix, so there's a lot of the things that end up going into that at this point. We have some veterans, but we have some young guys we're going to break in, and we've got some guys in the middle of their career that have done very well for us. I don't think when you look at the game's different, so you can't really go back and say the historical aspect of it, because, of course, free agency didn't exist until the 70s. And when you start talking about all those other great clubs that were there, the Yankees or the Dodger club from way back when, they were together forever because they didn't become free agents. But I think all in all, as you look back at the situation, I think you always have to be cognizant of the age of your players. We have some players that are in their mid-30s. You always worry about a decline when players get up into their mid to upper 30s. But I will say the game's changed, and sports has changed a lot. And quality, premium players that continue to perform at high levels due to so many new things that we've indoctrinated throughout the years. Better conditioning, better nutrition, better combination of sharing of information. So you see a lot of players. I saw the other day, I mean, I follow other sports too. Golden State Warriors, one of the favorite teams in the NBA this year. Four players over 35 years of age that are going to be starting. It's never happened before. You've got two clubs that are competing this year. They got a 41-year-old quarterback that's going to be on Thursday Night Football. So you see more of that, but you also have to be cognizant that not everybody's like that, and there's exceptional athletes and how they work and how they take care of them and themselves, and those are things that we know. So that's where keeping a core together. I mean, I looked at this because myself the other day, I think that if you look back, the Atlanta Braves, who had a core together for many, many years, made the playoffs 14 straight years and won one championship. The Yankees have been in the postseason 20 straight, or they missed 1 year, 20 times in the last 21 years. They won one championship. The Dodgers, until just, and of course you had the COVID year, they had a lot of years together with the core, and they won last year. And they've made some significant financial investments. They've done a great job, and they've picked the right players. So I don't think it's so much the core if they do well, but you also have to have that core, which you go back year in and year out, they continue to work hard, they continue to be driven, which I know our guys are. But you have to perform at the big levels at the postseason, which isn't always easy. And that's like when I saw this Dodger pitch, and it worried me going into the series because I watched some of those guys throw before we got here, and they got their guys healthy and right at for us, the wrong time. So we'll see how long they can keep it up.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Go to Howard in the middle.
Dave, a couple things to just kind of drill down into. The outfield side of things, obviously Harrison was really effective for you in center field. He has played left. Crawford has played, you know, center and left for you guys. I'm wondering, do you see a scenario where they could both be in your outfield next year? And do you have a preference for one over the other in center or left?
Well, I wouldn't say any preferences one way or the other and all that. And I don't really know how all that picture is going to work together, because when you start talking about the free agency aspect of it, the growth of Crawford, you know, Rojas still is a guy that we like. He would have been. I saw somebody say, geez, I don't know why they didn't have more speed on their bench. Well, he would have been on our bench, but he was hurt at the end of the year, and he's fine now. He'll play winter ball. But how all that mixture works together with Brandon Marsh and Castellanos and all that, we'll just have to wait and see. But I think that's one of the things you'd have to look for us is who is your best center fielder if you have all those guys, if they're on your team. Crawford can play left or center. Bader can play left or center. He's been exceptional in center field. Marsh can play both. He's probably played better in he's been fine in center, but he's been a little bit better in left. So I don't know which roles they would play. It would be dependent upon who made the club at a particular time.
And just on the infield side, you know, you talked about some stability there. You know, with Bryson Stott, it's been now several years where he's really struggled to hit lefties, and obviously that came up in a big spot. Do you see him as your everyday second baseman going forward, or is that a potential spot to work in Aiden Miller, in addition to obviously, you know, Sosa, who did so much for you this year?
Well, Miller, I guess, could eventually play second, but Miller's coming up here. He's going to be an everyday player at the beginning of his career here. We're not going to bring him up and not play the majority of time. I mean, Bryson Stott's a really good player. He has not hit left-handed pitching as well as we'd like at times, but he has at other times. So it's just, I think it's almost a misnomer when you say somebody's an everyday player nowadays. When you look around Major League Baseball, it's a 162-game grueling schedule, really, when you start traveling and start doing everything. And so there are very few players that play just every single day unless you're stars. And, I mean, Stott sometimes played versus lefties and sometimes not. But he's a really good player, all-around player, and I'm sure like many times your manager, in this case Toppers, but when any manager, they look at matchups. I mean, you're looking at a situation as, for us in this case, is Sosa going to give us a better chance to win this game because this left-hander is really tough to hit versus a left-hander? I mean, years ago, you didn't see left-handed hitters hit versus Randy Johnson, for example. I don't care if you're an everyday player or not. You play a right-handed hitter at that particular time because you thought it gave you a better chance to win that game. But I think all in all, Bryson Stott is an everyday player. But at times, I'm sure he'll rest him versus tough left-handers.
And then just the last thing, you know, you referenced it. The Braves had the 14 straight division titles and one World Series. You know, the Yankees, all these postseason. It doesn't seem like even the Dodgers have figured out how to consistently win in the postseason. And I guess as you sort of evaluate where this team is, having won more games each of the past 4 years than the year prior, do you at a certain point say, you know, look, we're going to do what we can do to give us the best chance in the 162? Or do you think there is some sort of formula that does exist in the postseason?
Well, I've always felt there is a difference, no question about it, 162 game, because you're going through a marathon versus a short postseason. And I don't like to say it's the randomness of the postseason, but anybody knows that if you play a one game postseason series or a best of three, there's a blue pit that can make a much bigger difference than it will in a 162-game season. But I do believe that, all in all, you build your club and some similarity. But your fifth starter, for example, doesn't become as important in the postseason as it does during the regular season because you really don't use that person. I think you build it with really good starting pitching. I've always believed that. But it's still, I mean, we had really good starting pitching. So but we faced a club that had really good starting pitch. And actually, if you look, it's and you check back, this has been a little bit different for the Dodgers because they haven't had as good a starting pitching in the postseason in recent years. Last year, they were in a position where they kind of mixed and matched and had bullpen games based upon it. But when you're throwing the guys out there and have them, I mean, that's the ideal scenario. I mean, I'd love to be able to be in a position. I don't know what's going to happen with Ranger, but all of a sudden you start saying, we have a healthy Wheeler. We have a healthy Sanchez. We have a healthy Lizardo. We have a healthy Nola at that point. And I mean, to me, that's an ideal way you go into the postseason and you try to do your best at that point. But you still have to score runs. You still have to get – I mean, it's a fine line. And really, if you look back, and we've talked about it here, and this is not blaming anybody, right? It's the happenstance of how the game goes. I mean, the Dodgers, they didn't make very many mistakes. Probably game four, Muncy misses that ball at third base. We score eight runs. We outscored the Dodgers in the series, right? Doesn't make any difference. You lost three games. But when you look at home plate, if Trace throws on this side of the plate on a very difficult play versus that side of the plate, they don't score any runs at any. Right? That's the difference. If Kirk makes that play in there, who knows what happens the next inning, right? They were struggling to score runs against us just as much. JT had told me that immediately the umpire apologized for missing the call strike three, right? Everybody's written on it. He makes that call strike three, they don't score a run. So that's how fine a line it is, can be. But you still have to get hits, and, you know, Teoscar Hernandez had a big three-run homer for them. You know, we hit the ball out of the ballpark in the fourth game, but other than that, we really struggled to do so. But, again, it's asking some very difficult it's a difficult chore to do with what we're facing.
Okay, front row here, Tim.
If there were a few moments this season where Nick seemed upset with his role and maybe with Rob to a degree, I know he's under contract, but can that relationship continue for another season?
Well, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to get into specific players that are on our roster under contract, but the things that you talked about are accurate, but we'll see what happens.
And then did Bryce come out of the season okay? He had the wrist injury at some point in the summer. Like, is that something you expect to have to be addressed at all this offseason?
He's fine. Yeah, he's 100%. There was no issues at the end of the season with his wrist.
Grace?
Dave, what do you need to see from Justin Crawford to make you confident that he can be an everyday starter in 2026?
Well, I think he needs to go to camp and just do what he's basically been doing. He's led leagues in hitting. He can steal bases. He's a good energy guy. He's a solid outfielder. So you just want somebody to come in and just keep their head above water to show you. I don't expect him to carry our club in the very beginning of the season, but you also don't want to put him in there where you think that he would it'd be a bit too much for him. I don't think that's going to happen, but you still need to show it. But I don't know what else he really does at the minor league level at this point. He's at 340 at the AAA level and leads the league in stolen bases or among the league leaders in stolen bases. So it's really a matter that you just want to make sure you watch him, that you feel comfortable. And he has never been overwhelmed when he's been with us at any level, and we keep moving him up. And, of course, he's got the base Major League Baseball background. So you really want to just see that he just continues to handle himself the same way that he has.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.